Out this evening. Tonight we're going to begin a study of Joshua. And this will be what we will begin looking at. This will be our first lesson, maybe two, I don't know. And then this is back there on the table for you to get. It'll be the following lesson. And I'm not going to say that I'll finish this tonight. Probably won't. So just keep that for use as we reach that. We are using a study guide from Mike Willis, and I've made those copies, and just so everybody understands, there's no copyright violation. The congregation has bought what it called a class version of this book. It's about 93 pages. And what it allows us to do is to make all the copies that we want to. It also allows us to download 100 copies of it. So if you would like a download of this 93-page book, send me an email. I'll send you the link and you can have the whole thing online. I know a lot of people use their mobile devices, and so that is an option. But we have bought the class version, and so for now I'll be making copies of these. I made that decision before I found out that the automatic document feed on our copier doesn't work. Looking back, that might not have been my best call. You know, an engineer would have picked that up and said, well, you know, if you don't have an ADL, then there's not much, it's harder to do that. So anyway, that being said, we are going to begin tonight a study of Joshua. And what I'd like to do is just begin by talking a little bit about where we are in the study. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. So we just finished chapter 34 of Deuteronomy. And where are we? We're at the verge of the Jordan. And what's happened to get us there? And so the Jordan River, if I can get this to work, is right there. It goes from the Sea of Galilee down to the Dead Sea. And so we're kind of right in here. There's an important place right there if you can read that. There's a map on like the third page or fourth page of the things that I handed out if you can't. But this is the area that we're going to be talking about for the conquest. What do we know about that area? Do we know anything about it?
West of the Jordan is Hittites.
And a bunch of other people. And the Canaanites and the Thisites and the Thatites. What we learned last week, I think, in chapter 34 of Deuteronomy was Moses went up to the top of Mount Nebo and God told him to look over this. Mount Nebo's about right in there somewhere. And you can stand on that. You can stand on that. You can see where Jerusalem is on a clear day. Obviously, you can see the Dead Sea. You can see the Jordan River Valley through here. And then there's this set of mountains that that come all the way down here and up to here. I had to cut it off so it'd be a little bit bigger, but Mount Hermon would be kind of right up in there, which is pretty much the headwaters of the Sea of the Jordan River. So we're right right in here, and a bunch of things are just about to begin to happen. Just a little bit of background on the Promised Land. How big do you think that is? Total geographic area. How big do you think? Or what's the dimensions of this? And there's a reason for this question.
About the size of New Jersey.
No, much bigger than New Jersey. It's about the size of Vermont. It's 200 miles long and 90 miles wide. So if you're standing right here on Mount Nebo, you can see Jerusalem on a good day. You can see where Jerusalem is. I mean, where Jericho is. Actually, from Nebo to Jerusalem is about 27 miles. To Jericho, it's about 12 or 14 miles. My point is, this is not a big area. If you started here and drove, for people that know about Mississippi, if you drove from here to Meridian and then went straight up to the Tennessee line, followed the Tennessee line west and came straight back down here, that's Israel. About 100 or 90 miles by 200. It's very small. It's very small. And so why would it be so important? If it is. It's a major trade route. You can't get anywhere without this. All this grain that's coming out of Egypt right here. You've got to pass through this land to get anywhere pretty well. And so on the east side of this is the desert. So you've got to go right here. The characteristics of this land, including the things that are involved in the land, are what made Solomon such a wealthy individual. He actually built treasuries. There was one right across here in Tiberias, right in the bottom of the Sea of Galilee. He actually had treasury cities to put all the money or the gold or whatever they had at because it was too cumbersome to bring it down to Jerusalem where he was. So you contrast this, and the reason I'm doing this is because when we look at this, you're talking about a little over half the size of Mississippi, and guess what? Just about the population of Mississippi is about to go in this land and depose the people that are there. So we've got a couple of million people. Mississippi's probably got 3 million, somewhere in that area. But that's about the size and the population of Mississippi. It's a very small area. Very small area. It's said that you cannot conquer Russia because it's so big. It's 1/7 of the whole world's land mass. You know, this is not a big thing. I mean, this is not a big area. I mean, when you get to the Mediterranean Sea over here, that's it. That's as far as you can go right here to the Mediterranean Sea. And so anyway, it's not a great big area, and it's not an insurmountable amount of people that are going in there to conquer that. Jerusalem is about 2,700 feet above sea level. The Dead Sea is about 1,600 feet below sea level. The Sea of Galilee is about 650 feet below sea level. So if you didn't have these mountain ranges right here, guess what? The Mediterranean Sea would flood the whole thing. But there are mountains here. And so when you read in the Gospels about, well, Jesus was up here, right in there would be Capernaum, and right in there would be Bethsaida and all that. When you read in there, and he was over here in Nazareth, so you don't go this way. You come down this Jordan Valley to get there, and so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of transition that comes through Jericho to get you to Jerusalem. So we're in an area that is that's small, and I was going to tell you from it's about 18 miles from Mount Nebo to Jericho. So these people are sitting there looking at it. You know, they're looking at it, and you've got all these people over here that are that are waiting to enter the land. All right, so one last thing on background. the latitude of Jerusalem, and again, if you know anything about where we are in Mississippi, the latitude of Jerusalem would go through Ellisville and Mies and New Hebron. Those are real small towns, but you know, if you're not familiar with that, it's about 60, 70 miles south of here. So pretty much, you know, if you could go straight from here to there, you would run just north of Jerusalem in the same latitude. And I think that may be important because it may show us some things about the climate that we might need to know. Okay, so the lesson book from Mike Willis, it's in the Bible textbook series. There are 19 lessons. The first one is the introduction, and we won't necessarily take a lesson a week or more than a lesson a week. It really doesn't matter. We'll talk about whatever it is that y'all would like to talk about, and we will we'll work our way through that. So we will at least be through the first quarter before we have any chance of finishing this, and at that point we'll do something else. So any questions before we start? Okay, here's a question from me. Who is this Joshua guy? Yep. What do you know about him? Numbers 11:28, and Joshua the son of Nun, the assistant of Moses, is what the English Standard Version says. The assistant of Moses from his youth said, "My Lord Moses, stop them." So this is a discussion that he's having, and so we're introduced to him in Numbers 11:28. Move over to chapter 13, and we see that his name is changed, and Moses calls him called Hoshea. That was the old name, the son of Nun. Hoshea means salvation. Joshua means pretty much the Lord saves. And so we have run into Joshua several times already. We turn to Numbers 27. Verse, let's say 27:18. So the Lord said to Moses, "Take Joshua the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand upon him." So what's important about that? Yeah, wouldn't you love for God to say to you, take Josh or take Alan or whoever? You know, this is not something that was picked randomly. It's not something that just was by accident. He is going to be one of the two spies that are going to go into the promised land. But, you know, here we see that he is in whom is the Spirit, and that's God talking to Moses. Move over, well, even down a little bit further, verses 18-23 there. "Take Joshua, lay your hand on him, make him stand before Eleazar the priest and all the congregation. You shall commission him in their sight. You shall invest him with some of your authority, that all the congregation of the people of Israel may obey, and he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before the Lord. At his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in, both he and all the people of Israel, with him the whole congregation." So he is to assist Moses. He's been selected by God. So it's not something that was not thought out and a part of the plan that God had.
Sam?
Yes, sir.
Is
saying that, but it does strike me, I don't know if it occurred to me previously, that this is a time of transition which creates vulnerabilities. That Moses has been their leader for decades at this point, and now they're transitioning to somebody else. It could have gone much differently.
Yeah. Yeah, think about if you were taking George Washington's place commanding the Continental Army. That wouldn't even be close to the responsibility here that Joshua is about to take on. This is a big deal. That's the reason that we're looking at these verses to support. This is not just Moses walked in his tent one day and said, you know, Joshua and Caleb get to go, flip a coin, which one of these people is going to lead the people. These people have not been, you know, they've not been able to do anything without Moses, period. It's all been Moses providing him with the judgment that came down from God during all of this period of wandering. And can you just imagine the responsibility that is being passed right here? It's huge, just an absolutely huge deal. I'm listening. Yes. Yep. Absolutely. It's been structured and it's been organized because these people have had 40 years to be deciding what they're about to do. So yes, it is structured, but tell me what happens when you have a train running and there's no engineer. You know, you've got to have someone of really great substance, Josh. Nor any of the people that, any of the Israelites that came after that. So yes, you don't want to make this any simpler than it really was, but this is on the job training when he says give Joshua some of these things that you're doing. It's, you know, it's like, well, you don't let the pilot grab the plane the first time he's coming off the ground. You have somebody that's with him. And so there's a period of time here that Moses is with him, and it's, you know, it's purely training him for what he's about to do. This is a big job. We don't get anything else out of this tonight. This is a big job. And you are following a leader that is just beyond explanation of what Moses has done. And when we get over into the first few verses of Joshua, we're going to see how important that is when the Lord's talking to Joshua, that everything that Moses has done and has done for him just jumps out there at him. We read 32:12, none except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. Wholly followed the Lord, both of them have. I don't know why Caleb was not selected, but Joshua has, again, he's been training for this job for a long time here. And then the final the final turnover that we find is toward the end of Deuteronomy, and Deuteronomy 23, and the Lord commissioned Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, "Be strong and courageous, for you shall bring the people of Israel into the land that I swore to give them. I will be with you." And so that's God talking to Joshua. And remember that phrase, "Be strong and courageous." We're going to hear that again and again and again and again as we get into the book of Joshua. Be strong and courageous, for you shall bring the people of Israel into the land that I swore to them, I will be with you. And then one more time in Deuteronomy, we see that 34 in verse 9, "And Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid hands on him. So the people of Israel obeyed him and did as the Lord had commanded Moses." So now we've got the transition here. We have moved from Moses, and now Joshua is beginning to take over, and we see the, you know, wouldn't you love to be described as being full of the spirit and wisdom, of the spirit of wisdom. Because this, he had to illustrate this to the people that were going to follow him. If he didn't, this just wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work. Yes, sir.
You asked earlier what we know about the land. We know that people knew the inhabitants of the land because they went spies out and were too afraid to go and get it. And they could have gone a much more direct route to talk. Basically, at this point in time, when Joshua was ready to take over, they could have already had the land and had it divided. And I think Moses' words and God's words to Joshua saying, "Be strong and courageous," are straight out of what Moses, the kind of courage Moses had to have to tell God, "Please relent from destroying all these people. You've brought us out of Egypt." I mean, that takes an incredible amount of courage to stand before God and say, "No, no, no, please don't hold this against these people entirely. Don't wipe them all out." That's the kind of courage Joshua was probably, whether he knew it or not, was likely to need.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the shortest route to where they were going started way down here in the Negev, and they were there 40 years earlier, and so the spies came right up through here, all the way up through here, up here, and off this chart up in, well, they're right there to Dan. They had like 250 miles that they went from here in the Negev, and they were ready to go. Joshua and Caleb were ready to go. So the direct route to get you there was going to be 40 years ago. You guys just go north and just keep going. And that would have, you know, that would have been the way that most of us would think it should have happened, but it didn't. And Moses would have been 80 years old at that point, and it would have been much less of a strain on him. And, you know, we would have had 12 Joshuas instead of Joshua and Caleb. We would have had people that had just witnessed all the miracles coming out of Egypt that these people were just hearing about, the ones that are going in there now. So we've come around here, and we've come up through the King's Highway, and from down here back up the King's Highway, we've got, you know, a couple of bumps in the road that have happened, but it's time for them to go over there. The torch has been passed. Moses is dies here around Mount Nebo, and the plains of Moab are, you know, are where he's buried. somewhere, I assume here, but anyway, that's not information that we need to know. Okay, we're about 1400 BC, 1400, 1350 BC, something like that. That's where we are. And the job has passed to Moses. Before he dies, he has told Joshua what his responsibilities are, and you get to the end of Deuteronomy, and we read, there's not arisen a prophet since in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. None like him for all the signs and wonders that the Lord has sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his servants and to all his land, and for all the mighty power and all the great deeds of terror that Moses did in the sight of Israel. So Moses is, Moses is our guy. He is the one that that they have relied on, that God has relied on to be with the Israelites and bring his chosen people through all of this. And he's 120 years old roughly when he dies, and it's kind of interesting to me that when we get to the first five verses of Joshua, Moses' name is mentioned five times. When the first five verses here, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise and go over this Jordan, you and all the people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I promised to Moses. So what are we fulfilling here? And when did that start?
Abraham.
Yeah, so this is what I told Abraham. This is what I told Isaac. This is what I told Jacob. This is what Joseph knew was going to happen. So he told y'all to put his bones in a coffin and bring him out of there. So there's these are the promises, two of the three promises that were made to Abraham are now being fulfilled. And there's no, if you do this or if you don't do that or whatever. Moses is told, or Joshua is told here, I am giving this land to them, the people of Israel. So, we are at the beginning of what Joshua's job, or what his job is going to be. And God says, Moses, my servant. Like I said, five times in five verses. I have thought for a while that we should put together a class on what it really takes to be a Christian, because we talk about a lot of different things. We talk about spiritual living, things like that. And for a long time, I've thought, well, what we really need to do, especially since a lot of our classes are going online, is we ought to at least let people know what they need to do to get on that road. It doesn't really help for them to know what your deep spiritual issues are, because most people think that they've already met that road to salvation. And so, I don't know if you remember, years ago there was this book that came out, Five People You'll Meet in Heaven. And the plot was, well, you died, and so when you get to heaven, and so you're assuming that you're going to get there, who would you see? And it was like a plumber and a this and a that, and stuff like that. Things that obviously were not scriptural, didn't mean anything. But, I've often thought that we should go, and a part of our evangelistic effort should be, who are the people you're going to meet in heaven? If we can teach you how to get there, who are the people that we're going to see, or the people that you're going to see when you get to heaven? Now, how do we know where Moses is right now? Is he in heaven? Well, here would be a good indication to me. If I were making that list of people, a good indication to me would be that that Isaiah would be there, because he was taken up. Enoch was taken up. When's the next time you read about Moses after we get through with here? Transfiguration. What's the deal there? Moses, Isaiah, and Jesus. That's in Mark 9, verses 2 through 4. Moses is one of those guys. He's going to be there. And he's going to be in heaven with us. That's how important the work was that he did, and the reward that was given to Moses. So anyway, somewhere down the line, I may preach a sermon on that, and or I may put a series of lessons together so that we can do that. I think that's an important part of our work. I really do. I love studying deep, intensive spiritual thoughts and things like that, but most of the people you see today, and I'm saved and this has just helping me. I see things every day on Facebook from people that, they've completely missed the boat. So anyway, without a doubt, if you believe Mark 9, Moses is in heaven. And so he'll be one of those people that we will see there. Okay, we're just about to start Joshua now. That's kind of where my preparation was. I'd be glad to listen to questions or comments. Robert's about to ring the first bell. Or any thoughts from anybody? Absolutely. And what we might could infer from his selection and from the fact that he was one of the 12 spies that went there was that he had a different demeanor than Moses had. I don't know what Moses' demeanor would have been. We hear him talking at the burning bush, "I can't do this, I'm not really good at this or that. We'll take Aaron along to speak for you." I was talking to somebody the other day about something, and I said, I'm Moses and Robert is Aaron, because he's the guy that's talking all the time. And I'm the scribe, I do all the stuff like that. That's a terrible example, but Moses' talent was probably not anywhere close to what was needed for this trip into Canaan. It just couldn't be, I wouldn't think. And so we have a military a military leader there, and it's a different job. It's a different job. I think of it not unlike David and Solomon, the opposite of David and Solomon. David was the guy that did all the war. Solomon was the guy that built the cities. You know, he built his treasury cities. He did all of those things and reaped the benefit of what David had done. It's a different job description completely. You're exactly right. And it's, you know, we've got to do everything that we can to follow the route of taking the land here. And we'll, you know, next week we'll get into the first of chapter 1, and we'll probably go through maybe into a little bit of chapter 2. But it's a different job. And so it's interesting to me that God picks different people to do different jobs. Think about Paul. Paul was just, you know, I've just got to do this, you know, I'm, you know, you just think of the personality that he must have had to have done all the things that was done.
I did my math right. Joshua at this point, when he's taking over, he's 85.
Well,
you know, he's a military guy. I understand there's like different kind of time spans going on here with longevity and such. 85 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, in their case, it very well could have been, but yeah, he's not a young man, certainly not, and there's, you know, there's a lot to happen. One last thing on this map up here: everything that you read about from here to the New Testament, when Paul starts going to do his missionary journeys into Asia, it's all going to happen right there. Every bit of it's going to be right there. Thank y'all for your participation.